Fred Film Radio. Silent Film Festival, Pordenone, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2017 Giornate del Cinema Muto, that's the Pordenone Silent Film Festival, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Serge Bromberg. Thank you very much for joining us.
Bonjour, thank you.
Filmmaker, film preservationist, and head of Lobster Films, lots of other things, but I think the best way to start off this interview is, would you like to maybe introduce our listeners to Lobster Films and tell us what it does, an overview?
Yeah, well, a presentation is probably necessary because Lobster is a rather unique company in its genre. It was established in 1985, like 32 years ago. I was a collector at the time coming out of the business school, and I was so passionate about classic films and silent films that although there is no market for this kind of thing, you know, very few people are interested. There's a lot of films that are lost forever. They were not kept, you know. You shoot a film, you put your negative or the can in a drawer, and then the next generation takes the drawer and throw it away because they need the room or anything. So we consider today that half of the production ever made in cinema is lost. And of course, the more we go back in time, the more lost films there is. So Lobster is basically an idea. Let's try to find as many films as we can in attics, basements, flea market, collectors, gather them like an archive, restore them, and most of all, share them with the audiences. And try to, in a way, restore the audience, you know, to make people realize that silent cinema was invented in 1927 when sound arrived. Before there was sound in cinema, there was only cinema. Silent cinema did not exist. Cinema is a whole, except it had no voice or no sound for about 35 years. So, you know, that's my life, dedicated to showing the films, restoring the films, sometimes playing the piano, which I don't do here. We're about 20 people doing this in Paris. We were fortunate enough to find our business model, and I'm fairly proud of what we have achieved, including receiving in 1997 the Jean Mitry Prize, which is the Grand Prix for the Giornate for lifetime achievement. I was only 35 at the time.
Ah, there you go. Well, you mentioned that you were passionate about you know, early films. Where did that passion come from?
Well, you never know where passion comes from. Why do you decide to speak with a lady you meet in the street? Why? I'm thrilled at the fact that watching the films that our grandparents or grand-grandparents watched may seem like a trip back in time. I'm watching what they saw. Imagine how many programs or files you have in your computer or in your mobile phone that is older than 10 years. Hardly any. Well, with those films, you go back 120 years ago and you have the image as sharp as it was when it was made, even sharper. So it's a visit in another world where the people are not trying to talk to you, but you see them speaking to each other and you don't know what they say. It's like a dream world. You know, I like to explain, in 1902, Georges Méliès, the head of the master of trick films, if you have seen Hugo by Marty Scorsese, you know who Méliès was. When Méliès filmed The Trip to the Moon, a bunch of astronauts going to the moon and landing there, he basically had a short stage about 6 meters wide and painted a background of rocks and pretended it was the moon. It's completely ridiculous. We're in 1902. He has no idea what is on the moon. But, you know, when you see gravity today, you see so wonderful special effects. And at the same time, you know there are special effects. So at the end, you say, oh, well, okay, that was nice. But in 1902, when they saw that ridiculous stage with those ridiculous people acting as if they were on the moon, the people did believe those images were the actual moon. They didn't know what cinema was. They only knew what magic was. And they were more thrilled watching those 10 minutes of early film than we would be today watching 2001 A Space Odyssey. It's just... That's the difference between yesterday and today.
What do you believe is the kind of reaction that audiences get watching these films that may be 120 years old?
Well, you should not rely on what you see here, because most of the people who are here are specialists or scholars. At least they know what classic films are. But the general audience, when they are presented a silent film, for the first 3 minutes, they say, oh, it's silent. But they have a pianist in the room, so they wonder, oh, or an orchestra. They wonder, oh, how is he going to play such a long music? Has he been learning? Is he improvising? And so on. And after 2 or 3 minutes, you just forget. It's just cinema at its best. There's no sound cinema. There's no silent cinema. There's not even black and white or color. You know, it's like if you heard a music by Mozart and said, oh, this is old music. Or you watch a Shakespeare play, you say, it's old theater. No, not at all. It's just a theater in its time. Shakespeare, there is no mobile phone. There is no television sets. Because when the stage, when the plays were written, those were not around. So same thing with cinema. But when you watch a Charlie Chaplin film today, you love probably much more than in any of the films today. Remember The Artist, the silent film made about 5 years ago, who got all these Oscars. Why did it get all these Oscars and that recognition around the world? It's not because it was a masterpiece. It was not a masterpiece. Just because it showed people that there can be something different, and it works just exactly the same. So why bother? We have all those films. Many of them are lost, and it's our job, as long as we're here, to find them before they melt. Films do not last forever. After such a certain period of time, they melt, and restore them and pass them to the next generation. Most probably in 50 years from now or 100 years from now, people will realize how beautiful these were, and there will be a new trend for silent films and classic cinema. But if we have not preserved the film by then the films will not be there, and it will not happen.
There you go. Speaking of lost films and speaking of Méliès, there is a film that you're presenting here, screened for the first time, I believe, to the public in Pordenone. Would you like to tell me a little bit about it?
Yes. It's a strange story. I mentioned Méliès, who was a producer, director, and was not very much aware of the expectations of the audience. So when he started, what he did was very new, and people loved it. Then it was in 1897. But of course, after a while, he was always delivering the same tricks. So by 1910, everyone was fed up with Méliès films, and he went bankrupt ended his life in poverty. Nevertheless, in 1923, he had to move away from his house that he has sold, and all the negatives of his 530 films that he had made during his entire career were there. So he decided to burn them, so that the world had been so unkind to him would not have the films. And he actually burned his 520 negatives. So the only way today we can see a Méliès film is because there would be a print of it forgotten somewhere, and you know, that we would find most of the time by pure chance. Out of the 520 films he's made, only 200 survive after about 90 years of search, which shows you that it's really difficult. And of course, most of the places have been searched already. So the average discovery rate of Méliès films is about one every 2 or 3 years. So it's really exceptional to find a new one. And this one, the one we're going to present as part of the final event, is actually a film that was part of a collection a distribution company called the Brinton Company in America. And the family who was doing this distribution in the early days of the 20th century, of course, stopped its activities and left all the films in an attic where they were found in 2000, the beginning of the year 2000, by Michael Zarr, a professor. So he brought the film to the Library of Congress, not knowing what they were. There were no titles at the time, no credits, no opening, nothing. And the Library of Congress copied all the films without knowing what they were. And of course, it's difficult to identify a film when you don't know anything about it. And while I was doing identification at the Library of Congress, I realized what the film was and could identify it fairly easily. So discovery is a three-step discovery. Michael Zarr discovering the film, the original film itself, the Library of Congress preserving it without knowing what it was as an assemble of fragments, and me identifying the film. So I'm not bringing the film, I'm just let's say revealing the film to the world, but those three parties have been necessary on the road of rediscovery for the film. Of course, there are 300 films still to be found. So what I always say is that my favorite discovery in my entire life is most probably the next one. So if your listeners have films that they don't know where they come from, what they are, they may be rusty, dusty, don't junk them. So many lost films do not exist anymore. And it has Hitchcock, the Marx Brothers, John Ford, Jean Renoir, all the major directors of cinema throughout the world have lost films, and they may be by your neighbor. So please, if you know where to find films, do not junk them. Go to the nearest film archive, or dial, or go on the website and do film archive in my country, and call. The archives will be happy to come and pick up your films. They may be treasures. Maybe not treasures that are of commercial value. There's very few money value, but they are cultural treasures, and that's essential.
Well, with that, I thank you very much for joining us. It was a great pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much.
And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.